This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Okanagan Crush Pad. They invite you to join the wine club today. Order online and receive VIP treatment when you visit the winery. Open year-round. Find them at OkanaganCrushPad.com. Hello and welcome back. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio Year 10. We began our life on the Naramata bench many years ago. And I thought if I did a show like Tasting Room Radio about food and wine, that I could teach myself about food and wine, and anyone who listened could learn as well. And that's what we've done. Here's the cool thing. I get to meet people along the way who are absolutely fantastic. One is Curtis Colt. He's a wine educator. He's a wine expert. He's a judge. He's a teacher. And he, along with his friends, Jeff Curry in particular, have now done 5 years of Top Drop Vancouver. It's a wine festival, small, just a couple of days. But these are all winemakers and owners and wineries who do their very best to be sustainable, organic, to not mess around with the fruit, to let it express itself. No additives, no sulfates, no chemicals, none of that stuff. And they're honest. They're true to the land. And it's reflected in their wines. We did part one last week. If you missed it, you might want to listen just for the interview with Jane Ferrari from Yolumba. She's a feature film, is what Jane is. So part two, we couldn't get everybody in part one. And all of the interviews would not fit into part one. So part two is this show. We start with two of the highest profile California wineries and the presidents of both of them. At Ridge, world famous Ridge, I think you know the story of Ridge. One of the wines that was poured at the Judgment of Paris, the shot heard round the world in 1976 when the Californians met or matched or beat the French at their own game. David Amadia will tell you the story behind how they got poured there because they didn't want to give Stephen Spurrier, the organizer, any of their wines. So he had to go to California and buy it. And Beth Novak-Milliken, who is the president of Spotswood, Top Drop, presented two Croatian wineries. I found one of the owners and winemakers from Stina in Croatia, and I paired him up with Wendy Ballester. And her specialty is Spanish wines. She did live there for a number of years. And the last interview is with Mark Vlosak, who is the founder and winemaker at St. Innocent in the Willamette Valley, Oregon. And then, quite a remarkable story right underneath my nose. I'm in Nanoose Bay, Vancouver Island, just north of Nanaimo. Much to my astonishment, I discovered that there was a winery above Nanaimo in the hills. It's called Chateau Wolf. And the vines there, including a Pinot Noir, are some 25 years old. And there's a young couple, Matt and Natalie Riga, have taken over this winery, have cleaned it up, and with help, have turned those vines around. Can you imagine a 25-year-old Pinot in Nanaimo? They're beautiful wines. So that's the show. At the end of this hour, I'll tell you what's coming down the road because we have some very interesting interviews next week. But let's get started. This is Tasting Room Radio. Cheers. My list has a double star beside Ridge Vineyards. Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California. David Amadia is the president. Before I think of Ridge and before I think of Sonoma County, I think of Santa Cruz. If I'm not mistaken, Neil Young is somewhere in the area. Is he?
Yeah, he lives in the mountains right above Woodside. He has an estate up there. Exactly.
And there's a bar up the spine of that where we always did the interviews.
Yeah.
We went out onto porches in this bar that I thought we were going to collapse into the valley.
Yeah.
And that's Neil Young, but that's a whole nother
thing. There's a couple of really nice bars up in the mountains. There's Alice's Restaurant and a couple of places you can ride your motorcycle up or your bicycle and have a nice drink up there. It's a good spot.
What do you share the valley with?
We're growing wines in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which is right above Silicon Valley. Now, Silicon Valley today, there's not much grown down there anymore.
No.
But before Prohibition, there were about almost 100 wineries down there, and it was also a lot of orchards. And that's really what, it was a real agriculture area, which is the Santa Clara Valley. But today, it's all Google, Apple, and Facebook that it's taken over down there, and a lot of residential.
What happened to those ghost vineyards? Did some of them survive?
In the southern part of the Santa Clara Valley, there are still vineyards going down towards Gilroy and that area, the southern part of the valley. There still are vineyards down there, but, you know, progress and humans are slowly encroaching south, as you might imagine.
This is a Top Drop 2018. I'm Terry David Mulligan. He is David Amadia. And he is the president of Ridge Vineyards, the famous Ridge Vineyards, Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California. I know from my brief history of California wines that Ridge was one of the players at the 1976 Judgment of Paris. What was poured that day from your label?
That was the 1971 Montebello. So that was our ninth vintage. Our first vintage of Montebello was 1962. All those wines were selected by Steven Spurrier. We had nothing to do with the selection. A matter of fact, as Steven tells the story, he called up the winery and told them about the tasting he was going to have and asked if we could provide a bottle, and we told him no, we couldn't. He called back again about 2 weeks later and asked again and explained, and he basically said, well, we don't sell wine in the UK and we don't give out free samples to anyone. So eventually he just showed up at the winery, came to California, came up there, explained again what he was doing, and we told him no again, and eventually he had to buy a bottle. And that's how he got the wine for the 76 tasting. He actually had to come to the winery and buy a 71 Montebello.
And what effect did that win and that placement have and that showing have on the label?
Well, it wasn't just the impact on Ridge, with the, you know, the impact was gigantic, but the impact on the whole wine world was gigantic, because up until that time, people only thought great wines would come from France. And really, after that tasting, things changed, and people started to think that great wines can come from different parts of the world, including California and Australia and New Zealand and Chile and places like that. So, but for us, we had always had a hard time selling wines, even in places like New York City and Boston in the 70s. But after that tasting, things really started to change, and restaurateurs and fine wine shops really started to embrace California wines. And that was probably the biggest short-term effect we saw.
Top Drop 2018, David Amadia, and he is the president of the famous Ridge Vineyards, Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California. Did you do one of the seminars?
Yes, I did.
Which one?
I did a seminar with four other California wineries, and we were really talking about trends in California wine and different winemaking philosophies.
Did you agree on what the leading trend was?
It was a well-chosen group, and all of us really were about making terroir-driven wines in a balanced style with moderate alcohol and good freshness in the wine. So there was a real unanimity about that philosophy, and as a counter to sort of that overblown, overripe style that's really you find a lot of in California.
And how is Canada as a market for you?
It's always been a very good market. I mean, I love this market. I worked up here in the wine business for 5 years, so I've spent a lot of time here. I've always enjoyed coming here. I got engaged in Whistler, so I have a lot of personal connections to the area. It's just hard right now, given the strength of the dollar. And for us, we're selling out of our wine, so we're not in a position to provide huge discounts for our wines coming here. So our wines seem relatively expensive, unfortunately, because of the strength of the dollar. But as we all know, that's a fickle thing, and that changes over time, and we just have to be patient.
What goes around comes around.
That's correct. Yeah.
How much of the portfolio are you pouring today? What have you got on the table?
Oh, my goodness. We have a really nice selection. I think we have about 8 wines, including, I think, 5 Zinfandel. So if anybody's interested in getting a terroir tour of California, okay, and looking at single vineyard Zinfandels, we got Lytton Springs or Geyserville or Pagani Ranch, all kinds of stuff.
I'm a Zap head. I'm coming over.
Okay, we're gonna
try the Ranch. I'm going to do that. You brought over the Ridge 2015 Geyserville 50th vintage.
Yeah, so this is our 15 Geyserville. It's our 50th anniversary bottling. Our first vintage at Geyserville was in 1966. We've made it now for more than 50 consecutive years. And this is, Jancis Robinson said this is one of the 100 top vineyard sites in the world at Geyserville. It's an old vine vineyard. The vines are about 130 years old.
What do they look like? Gnarly?
Oh, gnarly old men. Like you and me.
I feel like a vine today, yes.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful site because it's not just Zinfandel. All these old vines were interplanted with other varieties. Here at Carignan is the second variety, about 20% of the blend. Yeah. There's Petit Syrah, Alicante Boucher, Mourvèdre. We've actually gone out and documented there's 22 different grape varieties in this vineyard. All of them are picked together and co-fermented.
It's a field blend?
It's a field blend.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a tremendous wine. And it's a vineyard we had a 32-year lease on, but we actually bought the vineyard 2 years ago. So we've brought it in-house after 48 years, and now we'll be part of Ridge forever.
Last question. What is the next great project for Ridge?
Yeah, I mean, great. Well, Ridge is a very sort of slow-moving, conservative organization.
Which is why I ask it now.
I know. And we don't make a lot of changes very quickly. But this coming vintage, we're going to do something new and interesting. We're going to experiment with white Rhone varieties. And we're going to be buying some fruit down in Paso Robles, down by Tablas Creek, and we're going to make a Roussan Marsan blend for the first time ever.
God bless you. I have a mic in my hand, or I'd hug you. Thank you. Two of the nicest words on the planet, Roussan Marsan.
Yeah.
Thank you for this. I appreciate it. And welcome to Chop Drop in Vancouver.
Thank you. Really nice to be here.
We're speaking with David Amadia, who is the president of Ridge Vineyards in Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a home for passionate fans of food, wine, and friends.
From the land of three named people, Beth Novak-Milliken, who is the president and CEO of Spotswood. So we have two California winemakers, very famous back-to-back, Napa Valley, California, family proprietor, president and CEO. And last night, if I'm not mistaken, were you at Boulevard? Were you pouring at Boulevard?
Yes, I was pouring at Boulevard, along with Paul Paul from Blackbird Wines, Paul Leary, and it was a really wonderful dinner. Their food's
fantastic.
What was
it called? Was there a name for it?
I don't remember that there was a name for it. It was just a winemaker dinner at Boulevard with Blackbird and Spotswood Winery.
And I made this note, and I wonder if it's you. They poured cabs, including a pre-release 100-point 2015.
Right. We poured that at the very end because it's a really limited production, and we got 100 points from the Wine Advocate on that wine, and so we just wanted to give everybody the chance to taste it because it's limited. It's not going to be a lot of it, and it was an opportunity to share it with people.
Let me get this right. It's in barrel?
No, it has been bottled.
Okay.
The 15 right. was bottled in 2017, and it will be released this fall. This September, it will be in
but
the marketplace.
But when they gave you 100 points, was it in barrel then?
No, it was in. Okay. Let me think about that. I think it had just been bottled, actually.
Because that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Because, you know, in barrel is not the same wine you're going to taste a year later.
Well, I mean, it depends, right? If you're going to have a press person taste your barrel lot, either you're going to put together a facsimile of what the finished wine will be, or you'll share your core blend, kind of what you've put together, and let them know, look, that's about 60%. In this case, they tasted the final wine.
Talking to Beth Milliken, the family proprietor and president CEO of Spotswood Estate Winery in Napa. There's someone in the room, David Schofield, who always talks about the narrative of wineries.
Yes.
Tell me about the narrative of Spotswood, exactly how you got to this point. I know there's a lot of years there, but and what your brand represents to these wine friends.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my family bought the property in 1972. And after my father's unexpected death, my mother stayed and started making wine from our estate vineyard in 1982. And we started farming organically, actually, in 1985. So we were one of the first to do that, certified in 92. So that's something that's really, really important to us. Our vineyard, we're 45 acres right on the western edge of the town of St. Helena in Napa Valley. So romantic description is that you go to the Chevron station and make a left, go six blocks, and you'll run right into our property. It's just a really neat old property. And when we moved there in 1972, Napa Valley was undiscovered. Land prices were low, and we were lucky to move there when we did.
When I'm standing at Stagecoach, for example, can I look down and see your property?
At Stagecoach, no. If you were, say, up at Newton, you could look our winery. Yeah, you could look. So Stagecoach, no. But so we're further north and on the other side of the valley. We're on the west side of the town of St. Helena.
And how different is that terroir from, say, Stagecoach?
Completely different. So Stagecoach is up on Atlas Peak.
Right.
We're alluvial soils down on the western edge of, so it's benchland, basically. It's alluvial, so well-drained, sandy, kind of deep, rich soils. Good roots. The roots can go well deep into the soil. And
what did you bring to pour?
I brought our 2016 Sauvignon Blanc, our 2014 Lindenhurst Cabernet, which is our Napa Valley Cabernet, and then our 2014 Spotswood Cabernet Sauvignon, which is from 100% from our estate.
Does that, I'm not going to presume that there's no blends back in the portfolio, back at the winery.
This is a Cabernet Sauvignon, but it is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot. So it's probably 86% Cabernet Sauvignon, 9% Cabernet Franc, and the remainder Petit Verdot.
Isn't that the best part of winemaking?
Yes.
The blending?
Yes, it does. It adds, it makes it interesting, right? It sort of spices in your spice rack. So aside from everything else that you do, right, it's like having different pieces that you can pull together to create something that's more elevated than it would be just by itself.
Talking to Beth Milliken, the family proprietor and president CEO of Spotswood Estate Winery in Napa. How's your relationship to Canada?
Really good. Love Canada. Yeah, we have a great importer here and love being in Canada.
What's the next big challenge for Napa?
Next big challenge. I mean, dealing with a climate change, a warming planet, which we all know is changing. There are some people, unfortunately, in our country that don't believe that, but we know it is happening.
Yes. And we know they know they don't know.
Yeah, no, they're... Yeah, I'm not going to even get there because I'm sorry and disgusted. So probably climate change and just addressing, making sure that we're ahead of all of that, just doing everything that we can to respond to warmer, drier temperatures.
Last question: has your wine drinker changed south of the border? Is it younger? Are they looking for different things?
You know, our primary drinking, or our primary customers, because we sell a lot direct to consumer, are probably in the 50 and 60 year old ranges. Having said that, we have a lot of people in their 40s getting on the list, so they are looking for that generation is definitely looking for wines like what we're doing, because we're a winery in Napa Valley that we're making wines that retain, that have the beauty of California, but that retain their freshness, their energy, their tension. So we're looking at making wines that have great balance, great staying power, that are truly representations of their place, of their source, so they honor their estate origins. That's really important to us, and I think people are interested in that authenticity.
How do you like the room?
Like this room very much. I've been here
Top
just
drop.
Once before. Top Drop is very cool. Yeah, no, they do
very
a great
cool.
job.
It looks good on your hair as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
She is Beth Novak-Milliken, and she is the family proprietor, the president, and the CEO of Spotswood Estate Winery in Napa Valley, California.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Okanagan Crush Pad. They invite you to join the wine club today. Order online and receive VIP treatment when you visit the winery. Open year-round. Find them at OkanaganCrushPad.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by NewDistrict.ca. Did you know you can buy wine online? Just takes a few clicks for quality wine to show up at your door. Plus, NewDistrict.ca offers free shipping on orders over $200 and two-day delivery in the Lower Mainland. Go to NewDistrict.ca to order.
Here's one of the reasons why I came to Top Drop 2018 at the Roundhouse in Vancouver. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. I saw that there were two Croatian wineries here, and we have finally hooked up with one of them. Stina is the name of the label in Dalmatia, Croatia. And Emil Medin is the marketing director. And he has come all the way from where? Where did you come from?
From Bol, one small place on the island of Brač in Dalmatia in the Adriatic Sea.
Does Croatia understand its place in the world of wine? Do they understand how important they were to get to this point?
Yeah, listen, we are putting a lot of effort recently in the marketing of Croatia as a wine country. Though, does everyone understand in Croatia the importance of that? I'm not sure, but for sure at least 10 to 20 wineries, our colleagues, that are putting a lot of effort to make some export and to make positioning of Croatia on the world wine map.
Yep.
Yeah, we absolutely have to understand and do understand more than anyone in Croatia the meaning of that.
Now, how important is Canada and North America to Croatian wines worldwide?
I think in the potential of the market, for sure, it is very, very important. We have some nice sales in the United States. Our sales in BC are quite well in the beginning of this year. We started Alberta this year. So, yeah, market is very interesting. And more than that, you're just one country of amazingly sympathetic people. One country where we always have a pleasure to come, you know, to feel really, really, really welcomed. Country of beautiful living, and more than anything, country that is not closed. Country very open-minded
yes.
in the sense of wine.
Yes.
People there, you have a lot of, but in a good sense, not to take me in a bad way, wine geeks who want to taste something new, which is quite important
for us.
They're
not stuck in tradition.
Yes, not at all.
They're open.
But also, I'm following for the last 4 years, as much Stina is here, present at the market, development of BC wines, for example, and I see that you're making huge steps in quality.
Yes.
That's beautiful, because people will understand more and more. And so this is something, you know, we are coming here mainly with our indigenous varieties. It is our pride, our heritage. and it is not always easy to introduce those varieties to foreign markets, but in Canada they were really received amazingly well.
We're talking about Croatian wines, and Emil Medin is the marketing director at Stina in Dalmatia, Croatia. You know who Mike Gergich is? Okay, no. The reason why I say that is because people know him as a star in Napa.
I don't know if you're aware that he have his own winery in Croatia.
He does.
And his managing director in Croatia is my very good friend, Krešo Vučković. And I'm pushing him as we are friends, you know, it is, Croatia is a small country, saying, Krešo, I really don't give a damn if you are going to sell a bottle or two or none of them. I'm willing that we all participate in your showing anywhere in the world with the Croatian wine, because the name Grgic means a lot.
Yes.
Means more today around the world, wine world, more than name of Croatian wines.
Here's the strange thing. He couldn't get into America, so he landed in Halifax, took the train across, stopped here. He phoned the two wineries that were making wine in BC and said, I'm a Croatian winemaker, I can make wines for you. And they said, no. And he headed to Napa, Sonoma.
Really? I didn't know that fact.
And that's how they ended up. He could have been here. So here's the thing. What has Croatia given us in terms of what varietals are we looking at now that Croatia makes?
Today, from our colleague who is present here in BC market through another agent, Moreno Koronika, he is from Istria region. So you have two typical varieties for Istria, Istria and Malvasia, and Teran as a red variety. And we are present here with Poship, which is our most important white variety of Dalmatia. Looking forward, because it is sold out, our production is not too big. I really want to introduce another very, very nice white Dalmatian variety, Vugava, indigenous, to BC market, I hope next year. And in red varieties, we are growing Plavac Mali, most important Croatian red variety, Dalmatian variety. I don't know if you know or not, seems that you do. We are growing some Tribidrag, not here at the market at this moment. Tribidrag is back, actually Zinfandel from homeland.
Okay, here's what I want to tell the audience while you're here. You may not recognize the varietals that Croatia is growing, but you absolutely, positively have to know that they make fantastic wines and have been doing so for thousands of years. My daughter, Kate, and her Pete were in Split, and they brought me back a bottle of rosé and said, you won't believe this rosé. It was one of the greatest rosés I have ever tasted. And that's when I realized I had a lot to learn about Croatia. Tell me about this bottle that you brought.
So when you touch rosé, if they brought it from Split, from Dalmatia, it is something that we call Opal. It is a typical wine. It is like rosé wine from Plavac Mali, which is one variety giving full-bodied wines. Also, rosé is quite not typical rosé wine like Provence style. It is rosé with body, rosé that you can match with a lot of food.
It's a food wine.
Yeah, it is one. So we are tasting right now Plavac Malimeister, our line, our top tier in regular years. A selection of the best grapes from the best position. We are growing it on a very steep hill, 70% inclination of the hills.
Right.
South-oriented Plavac Mali loves lots of sun and lots of heatness. We are tasting 2011. Vinification process, fermentation and malolactics in oak vats.
What's this bottle going to cost here? What's the price point?
I think that in retail is around $68 in liquor stores.
Wow.
It is a pricey wine, but I can explain you just to get the reality of Dalmatian wine. Our for example, in Plavac Mali, for those premium Plavac Mali that we are producing, the yields per wine are up to half a kilo.
Yeah.
There is no machine work in those vineyards. It is not possible, you know. We wish that we can do something with the machines, but there is no way. So we are in a start judge to produce expensive wine because of the price of production of grapes.
Right.
So the idea for us is, okay, we're going to make the best wine we can. The best of the best. We have that material that can give us big wines. So if we have to be expensive, let's make something that is worth of money.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay. So we're talking about Croatian wines, And Emil Midden is the marketing director at Stina in Dalmatia, Croatia. If you ever get a chance to try a Croatian wine, I heartily urge you to do that, simply because they have never let me down in the wines that I've tasted, and this is a fantastic red that he's poured for me now. Thank you for being here at Top Drop.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a one-hour celebration of wine, food, and all the great memories that go with them.
Top Drop Vancouver 2018, Terry David Mulligan, Wendy Vallister, who I last saw, not in Jerez, where were we?
That was in Ribera del Duero.
Ribera del Duero.
Yeah.
And you have a table full of Spanish wines here. And I know that you believe in and love Spanish wines. So let's talk about two things. Spain's place in the world of wine today. Is it solid? Is it growing?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was just reading some statistics the other day. Spain is the country that exports the most wine out of any other country in the world.
Is it possible to define how they make their wine? They make their wines. They make the wines like everybody else, and then they hold on to them for 2 years.
The idea being that when the wines are released, they're ready to drink. However, there are a lot of more modern, a lot of the younger producers are now selling their wines when they're bottled and leaving it to people to drink them now or cellar them themselves.
And yeah. What was the Spanish wines' reaction to that? I mean, what did they think about that?
The Spaniards?
Well, I mean, there's this whole system that's set up and handed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Well, the Spaniards have traditionally in Spain, in most of the growing regions, they drink young wine. So the locals drink young wine, okay. Not aged wine, you know. So this was a system that was set up for export, basically, you know.
It was a good system.
Yeah. It was a good system.
We were getting wines that were 2 or 3 years aged in bottle.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what do we got now on the table?
We've got some really interesting wines today. And I'd like to point out I'm pouring for wines from Spain today,
yes.
Which is the regional body. For whites, we've got a fantastic dry still PX from Monte Moriles, down just around the Jerez area, just north of Jerez.
Right.
This grape variety is traditionally made into oxidative sort of sherry-style wines. Again, locally, that's what they drink for white wine, right?
Okay.
But not a lot for export. Delicious, really focused, fantastic acidity.
What's that handsome bubble bottle there?
Cuvée Ecampe is a traditional cava, sparkling wine, traditional method. So it's made like they make champagne, but with Spanish grapes. And we've got another really interesting Spanish white, Garnacha Blanca. Amazing grape variety, and if you can get your hands on one, I definitely recommend trying the grape variety from whatever producer you can find. There's not a lot of Garnacha Blanca around in Spain, and what grapes there are from very old vines, so you're apt to
this
get
is a
great
thing.
Bottle. Yeah,
it's a
absolutely.
Good thing.
It's fabulous. It's fabulous and unique, you know. It doesn't happen in many other countries in the world. I've got an awesome Priorat here. Garnacha Carignana blend with a little cab to finish it off. It's absolutely delicious.
Juan Gil is there.
It's made by the Juan Gil family, actually. And it's called Blue Gray. To reflect the nature of the Licorea soil, right? The schist.
Tell me about the rosé.
The rosé is made from Garnacha Tinta in Navarra, in the north of Spain. So it's a lot lighter in color than a lot of the Spanish rosés are. When you get to the north of Spain, there's a lot of cultural exchange between France and northern Spain. The border has changed a lot over history. And so this is made in a little bit of more of a French style, right? And how light
smart.
It is. But from Garnacha, which in my opinion makes the best rosé. Yeah.
And so basically, Spain has made its stamp on British Columbia, and Vancouver in particular, and probably in Canada. How are they doing worldwide?
Well, they're doing fantastically. And interestingly enough, as you see here with the presence of wines from Spain, they're taking Canada seriously. Internationally, absolutely. People People are beginning to discover the wines from Spain like they did the wines of Italy and of France years ago during the Franco era, while it was all, you know, still
contained,
within
yes.
the, exactly, within the country. Now, you know, Spain, we're just like, we happen to be another 60, 70 years marketing behind in marketing from the other countries, the old world countries, but we're already selling the most.
The thing about it is, a wine fan should know, marketing's marketing. It's in the bottle. It's what you're making that is so important. You have to trust in Spanish wines. You just simply have to.
Yeah, they have, Spanish wines have by far the greatest price-quality ratio.
Totally.
We've got very old vines, great concentration, low yields, but a lot of grapes. And so this gives us natural quality, you know, in the wines overall, from entry level up to very high level.
I wish you were teaching a wine course, a Spanish wine course here in Vancouver so that we could attend.
Well, I'm working on it right now.
Could you hurry up with it?
Hopefully in the fall with Stratera Wines, we'll be set up to be presenting a fabulous Spanish wine course.
She is Wendy Ballester. And if you ever have a Spanish wine question and you find her, stalk her for 10-12 seconds. She'll tell you about Spanish wines and Spain in particular. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Lovely to see you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by NewDistrict.ca. Our friends at NewDistrict.ca have launched a wine club. Monthly six-pack selected by local wine ace DJ Kearney. Delivered right to your door. Go to NewDistrict.ca to sign up for the wine club.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. I say that by way of introduction to Mark Blusek, who is the founder and winemaker at St. Innocent Winery. And he will represent not only the Willamette Valley, but the entire Oregon wine industry with this one interview. Is that okay?
I yes, it's fine.
Okay, fine. this is one of the things that I always talk about, and that is I would love to see more of the Oregon wine industry in Vancouver and in British Columbia and in Canada, but somebody else seems to have their attention. That would be the Americans.
Well, you know, their Americans are Americans, and they're kind of full of themselves. So, unfortunately, that's where we sell a lot of wine. But Canada has been a really important part of my profile, my mission, since very early. I started selling my second vintage in Ontario. And for a long time, actually, Canada was my biggest single market.
Wow.
Not an American market. I didn't start out with big American markets. I started out in Boston and Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then Toronto. That was the first three places I sold wine to, and I still am represented by the same people in all of those, you know, those things after 28 years.
What
now.
Were you making 28 years ago? What was your portfolio?
I was actually making Pinot Noir, single vineyard Pinot Noir, from two vineyards that I made for a very long time, kind of like what I'm still doing. And I made a Chardonnay. I still make Chardonnay. And I made sparkling wine back then. I did that for 13 years and then got a little bit frustrated and quit, and then realized that some decisions I had made with wines that were on Tirage, so I had made them in a different style but hadn't tasted them. And then when I finally disgorged those wines several years after I quit, I was like, oh, gee, this is actually pretty good. And so I did a test lot. So I made it from 88 through 2000. That was the 13 years. Then I quit. And then in 2006 and 7, I made a Blanc de Blanc Reserve, very long aging, and then kind of said, okay, let's see what that is like. And now I'm finishing selling that. And last year I said, okay, I'm making not only one, but this last year I made three different sparkling wines. And I'm back full on the bandwagon after 30 years.
Of course,
I'm like, I've got to make sparkling wine. I love it.
Mark Blusek, St. Innocent Winery, who is the founder and the winemaker in Jefferson, Oregon. How big is the portfolio now?
Well, I just shrunk it. I decided after 30 years that I wasn't going to retire. I was just going to reinvent myself. So I sold the interest that I had in a fairly large vineyard, which is actually the second vineyard I ever made wine from, that I bought 12 years ago. I was an owner, but not a majority owner, and built a winery at that vineyard that I did own independently. And then this last fall, I sold the building to those people at the vineyard, sold part of my interest, and bought 47 and a half acres in what's now, I think, one of the most interesting new regions in the Willamette Valley. It's called the South Salem Hills. Okay. And it's a really interesting south-facing series of actually four different little hillsides with two ravines that kind of cut the property into four parcels. And I planted all of those parcels with both Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, but really focusing on Chardonnay. One of the reasons is that there isn't very much Chardonnay in Oregon. Originally, it was half Chardonnay, but we kind of quit in frustration. The original clones were from California, and they were really designed to be grown in Bordeaux. We don't have a Bordeaux climate, we have a Burgundy climate. And so it took quite a while to actually get some real Burgundy clones into Oregon. When that happened, I was like, I like this. This is a really nice wine. And so when I decided to plant my own stuff, I was like, well, I could plant Pinot Noir, which is, there's, you know, 55% of Oregon is planted to it, or I could plant Chardonnay, which is 5%. And I thought, gee, do I grow the grape, which there's, you know, a boatload, or do I grow the grape, which is 1/11th of Pinot Noir? And as the climate changes and it gets a little bit warmer, we're actually moving more into the perfect zone for Chardonnay. And I thought, you know, I'm building this for my kids. And then vines are at their most mature when they're 30 to 50 years old. They make the most interesting wine. And why would I plant something that's going to get too warm? So I'm going to plant Chardonnay, where it'll be perfect for them. Because I want to set them up well.
Mark Vlasic, St. Innocent Winery, who is the founder and the winemaker in Jefferson, Oregon. I will note, for those of you who are not standing with us at the table, that we have a St. Innocent Pinot Noir on the table. After all that Chardonnay talk, 2015. How many clones in there?
So Temperance Hill in this vintage is just one. It's all Pommard clone, which is a little bit crazy.
Is there a number on that?
No. No, it's one of the original clones that came from California. So we don't refer to it as a number. There's two clones that we gave names to, Badensville and Pommard, and they were the original clones that came to Oregon. And then we brought all the 100, 113, 14, 15, the 777, the 667, the 548, you know, all those crazy things. But this is way back to the heritage, and it actually turns out to be one of the most earth-driven, one of the latest things to ripen. And so this vineyard, which is actually very high altitude and cool, it kind of makes no sense. But for me, it's always the wine that I pick in the summer. Temperance Hill, because it's high and cool and relatively late, always has a really nice acidity. When you think about summertime, what do you want to drink? Well, you often drink white wines. And is it just because it's white? No, it's because white wines have more acid, they have more freshness, they have a bit more purity. But this is exactly the nature of this wine in my lineup of single vineyard Pinot Noirs. It has beautiful freshness, it has really nice acidity, and this particular part of the Eola Amity Hill appellation, it's actually the highest in the southern part, which is the Eola part of the Eola Amity Hills. It's the highest planted vineyard in the whole area. And because of that, there is a really nice purity and slightly smoky quality that comes from the grapes. And when you think about what you're eating in the summer, it's things that you grill. You're not sitting in the oven on, roasting your butt off for 5 hours, you know, braising some ribs or something. You're like, flip it on the grill and put it in my mouth. And for me, this is the ideal wine for that kind of thing.
Flip it on the grill and put it in my mouth.
Sounds pretty good.
I think you have distilled the essence of summer in Willamette. St. Innocent, are you seeing guest visits? Are you seeing tour buses and things? And
we discourage tour buses.
Yeah.
But we're open 7 days a week. And even though we've only been in our new location for 2 weeks, we opened on the 5th of May. So we've always had a tasting room open 7 days a week. Our new location, which is just off I-5 in the South Salem Hills, is still open 7 days a week on Enchanted Way. And we actually, there's other vineyards on this road, but none of them picked up on Enchanted Way Vineyard. So we grabbed it, trademarked it, and you could come to Enchanted Way Vineyard and have an enchanted afternoon sitting outside on our porch on the deck, looking down at a pond, populate it with bass, but yes. There's a word for that. Well, anyway, there are bass that were put in this pond like 8 and 10 years ago, and they're pretty good size and can fish for bass and you know, we'll flay them and build a little campfire or something, and or just take them home and cook them.
Here's the sad thing. I did that job for 3 summers.
Oh.
Putting trout in rivers and lakes. I should know the name of that. However, I will blame it on the St. Innocent Pinot Noir 2015. Thank you for coming up here, coming north, and being part of Top Drop. Pretty nice room, isn't it?
It's a total pleasure to be here. Thank you. It's an honor.
St. Innocent Winery, Mark Vlasic, who is the founder and the winemaker. You can now find him in Jefferson, Oregon. This is Tasting Room Radio at Top Drop 2018 in Vancouver.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards. Experience Unsworth wines in their tasting room and enjoy the extraordinary taste and hospitality at the Unsworth restaurant. Details at unsworthvineyards.com.
I'm officially lost. Even though I had GPS in the car, I decided to turn it off because I knew where I was going. I knew exactly. And how, you can't possibly hide a vineyard in Nanaimo. Right? You just drive down the road, you'll find it. So 5 times later, after 4 U-turns, I finally found Chateau Wolf, the estate winery and vineyard, truly just above Nanaimo. Matt and Natalie Riga are the estate proprietors. It's nice to meet you both. Right. What were you doing before you became winemaker? Oh, you were chefs. Were you both cooking?
We had a small farm-to-table restaurant in Ontario previously. So we had it for 3 years. We sold it in 2014. So Matt was the chef. Also, we were the owners, operators, did everything in our restaurant. And I guess I was a chef too, because I did some of the desserts.
You did the big
I almost forgot.
So how was the leap?
It was a big leap, but the restaurant was just about as big, I think, in terms of a jump for us. It was a lot to learn in a very small amount of time. And
when you were running the bistro and doing the food, did you know your wines? Were you drinking wine? Were you asking questions about wine?
Yes. Definitely. We were learning. We're always learning. That's just part of who we are, and we're constantly evolving. And we really, that was part of our passion. We have a very strong passion for food and wine. So we were living and working really close to Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
Because we're farm to table, we were doing everything locally, got to know a lot of the wine producers there, and just developed a very strong passion for wine in general and loved learning about it and everything about it.
Prince Edward County, by the way, which is the other wine region, the other Niagara, and some would say even better considering what they're growing in, which is gorgeous limestone. And that's where Norm Hardy's from, right?
You got it. Yeah, that's right. We made a connection there with Mackenzie, one of his winemakers at the time.
Mackenzie Brisbois. I'm talking to Matt and Natalie Riga. They are the estate proprietors and the winemakers at Chateau Wolf in Nanaimo. So then you end up where? You always wanted to be on Vancouver Island, did you not?
We did, yeah. So we had lived in Victoria previously and just had fallen in love with the island. We thought we would never leave. We were just completely in awe with everything going on here. We actually started looking for a vineyard and winery while we still had a restaurant. And we came across this little tiny vineyard, only 5 acres, hadn't been in operation in 9 years. So
it had been abandoned, basically.
Yeah, so the original owner, his name was Harry Von Wolf, and he planted all the vines in the early 90s. We were really interested in it because there was Pinot Noir being grown, as well as Chardonnay, both grapes that we both adore. So after seeing that, we did a little bit of research, and he had actually searched over 300 sites on Vancouver Island before settling on this specific location.
What do you think it's about the location? What is it? Because, I mean, you got a mountain in behind you.
The mountain behind, he's looking for the south-facing slope. He's looking for the right soil composition. We're in a very warm microclimate, so the Jinglepot Valley has a very warm area.
I will remind you, of course, that you're surrounded by a rainforest,
yes.
Which is something else again. Sorry, you were going to say?
We have a large rock face at the back of the property that retains heat, and for the evening warms the vines, we believe.
Lots of water?
Yep.
We're above an aquifer, actually.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So you discovered that you had Chardonnay, you had Pinot Noir. How old were those vines then?
The vines planted in the early 90s. They're over 25 years old. We're really fortunate. We have one of the oldest vineyards on the island. The Pinot and Chardonnay was better cared for than the other side of the road, the Pont Blanc with the Viognier, Bacchus, and Sangiovese.
But they were healthy.
Still healthy, yeah, vigorous.
That's amazing. Then instead of blending Pinot with something or turning it into rosé, you wanted to make Pinot. What was the clone?
A 115.
So Mackenzie shows up with her winemaking skills, and between the three of you, you figure out what the plan's going to be?
Yes, pretty much. We had her come out and do a consultation, see and have a look at the vineyard for over a few days. Interestingly enough, we got a snowstorm. Mackenzie and I were out here pruning in about 2 feet of snow.
Okay, and here's this weird thing. Do you think the vines now know that they've got a second chance? Are they happy?
They're much happier than when we arrived.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And it shows in the fruit?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, we give them a lot of love. Now we have some sheep running through the... they're on the other side of the vineyard right now, but they're giving them some love too.
Yeah, you had your first release in, what, 2014?
To say
300 cases?
About that.
So what are you up to now, total production?
About 500 still.
Hey!
Yeah, we want to keep it small.
Okay, so now you have a winery and you have a vineyard and you have releases. I love the blend of the Viognier, the Bacchus, and the Sangiovese. All 25 years old, those vines. 85% Viognier and 7.5 for Bacchus and Sangiovese. 110 cases, $22, 25-year-old vines. You can't imagine what that tastes like until you put it in your mouth. Well, it's going to, you know, if you could make more of that, it would be pretty good.
We'll work on that. Yeah, it usually sells out in the summertime because it's such a nice summer patio sipper.
How do you know you want to stay this size? What tells you that?
We like doing what we're doing. We don't want to overproduce. We're very hands-on people. We enjoy doing the work. And the bigger you get, the more people you need, the less you kind of do, I think. Or maybe not the less you do, but you certainly take on a different side of the business.
I'm talking to Matt and Natalie Riga. They are the estate proprietors and the winemakers at Chateau Wolf in Nanaimo. So the Chardonnay. Who was more shocked to find Chardonnay in this field?
I think Vancouver Island is more shocked about it, to be honest with you. Everybody we bring it to is like, you can grow Chardonnay here? And we really like it. It's a great, cool climate Chardonnay.
So the Chateau Wolf Chardonnay... 44 cases, $22, right on the nose. The vines are 25 years old, and they're currently pouring the 2016. Then we'll get to the beautiful secret here. The 2016 Pinot Noir, Clone 115, close to sellout already. They only make 50 cases. It's $30 a bottle. 25-year-old Pinot vines. Now the Syrah. The Syrah is from the Naramata Bench?
That's correct. We deal with the same supplier year after year.
185 cases of Syrah. $25 a bottle. It's a gorgeous Syrah, my friends. And again, if you can just keep your hands off it, give it a couple of years, imagine.
I'd say a northern style, northern Rhone style.
Exactly that. Yeah. And the 2015 Rouge.
It's actually a fortified wine made with estate-grown Dornfelder grapes.
It's $18, and there's 54 cases. So I will make note that the Rouge has 54 cases. The Pinot Noir only has 50. You have to talk to your marketing people about that. Is it true that Harry von Wolf was born in Riga, Latvia?
That's what we read, yeah.
Harry was born in Riga, Latvia.
Yep, and
your last name is Riga.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Weird.
Strange, very strange, yeah. It was a very strange coincidence.
Natalie and Matt Riga at Chateau Wolf in Nanaimo. Here's the deal. How do people find the wines, first of all?
So we have a tasting room. You can come check out our vineyard and our winery and see and come purchase directly. We're also just setting up some online sales available on our website so we can ship anywhere in BC, no problem, and some provinces as well. But yeah, just send us an email, give us a call, and we can work through it. We're also in some of the independent liquor stores in BC and some local restaurants as well.
Where can we find it downtown Vancouver, for example?
Liberty Wine Merchants, Marquis, as well as Legacy Wine Cellars.
And there are some restaurants pouring you up downtown as well?
Yes. We're also in Chambar.
Oh, excuse me. I'll just pick up that name here. Let me just pick that up for a second. Chambar. Up and coming young restaurant. Okay. Well then, so no cider. You're not going to get any bigger. 5 acres of vines planted in 1990. A 25-year-old Pinot vine. I'm just saying. And sheep, so you know that they mean well. And you can come and visit them if you can find them.
Just turn your GPS on. It'll be much easier.
Wolf, W-O-L-F-F, Chateau Wolf, an estate vineyard, and it's just just above Nanaimo. It'll kill because on the highway, huh?
On a dead end road, too.
On a dead end road. Congratulations on all of this.
Well, thank you very much for coming. It's an honor.
Okay. I'm talking to Matt and Natalie Riga. They are the proprietors and the people who've given up their life to bring a vineyard back above Nanaimo. It was planted in 1990 by Harry Von Wolf. He passed away. The vines and the winery just went foul for about 9-10 years. And they found it, brought it back, put their money down, and they're making wines here. And the vines are 25 years old. Viognier, Bacchus, Cigarebe, that's a beautiful blend. The Chardonnay, the Pinot Noir, the Rouge, Dornfelder, which is a fortified wine, and Syrah from the Naramata Bench, my friends. It's Wolf Estate. That's it for another week on Tasting Room Radio. As promised, let me give you a heads up on next week's show. And frankly, it's another case of, can we get all of this in? I know we're going to start with a cookbook coming from the Wiccaninish Inn. The book is actually called The Wiccaninish Cookbook, Rustic Elegance on Nature's Edge. The book includes recipes from chefs who had been at the Wick: Rod Butters, Matthias Conradi, Mark Filito, Justin Labossier, Duncan Lee, Andrew Springett, and Matt Wilson. I've planned a meeting with executive chef Warren Barr and managing director and family founder, Charles McDermott. And the other special we're working on is checking out the neighborhood of Saanich, just north of Victoria. We'll visit a brand new winery called Deep Cove and their consultant, Pascal Madovan, Church and State, Divine, and Seasider. That's up ahead on Tasting Room Radio. You can find the podcast for this show on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. The 2015 Reserve Pinot Noir will be released very soon. Less than 80 cases produced. Its fruit represents the best of the best of Unsworth Pinot. Details at unsworthvineyards.com.